Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did they change history? Good evening and welcome back finally to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago. We give each movie a score from memory and then re-watch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remember. And then we score the movie again. With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's been a while. We've had a few circumstances beyond our control that have prevented us from finally getting around to talk about Chicken Run. So in the last few weeks, what have you been up to? Anything you want to share with our listeners?
Well, I aged a year and became very ill. Not very ill. I was unwell.
Yeah. Do you think the aging of a year thing was the thing that contributed to you to being unwell?
Absolutely, yeah. I've hit that age now where just getting out of bed makes me ill.
Interesting thing, because you said since we last met, we've aged a year, but it hasn't been a year. And I was thinking about this. You know, I was gonna say in our introduction, with me as ever is my son, who's now another year older, Sam. But you're actually only 2 weeks older than the last time we met.
That's true. Yeah.
So
two weeks to the dip. That's not true.
That's not true. So yeah, but you have technically gained a year.
Yeah, I have actually, yeah.
So happy birthday, Sam.
Thanks. Happy birthday.
couple of weeks ago. And things have changed for me too, but we will get into that another time.
Yeah. You've got a new... No.
Got a new what?
No, never mind.
No.
Doesn't matter.
nothing to see here. Let's move on. We have had an email... And this email, we've had many emails actually, but this is my favourite one. This email comes from somebody called Amelie, who is in France.
Nice.
If Amelie is in fact her real name, because even though that's what it says in her email, and the fact that she's from France, does seem a bit cliche, doesn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
Anyway, this is from Amelie, and Amelie is in the south of France actually, so it's perfectly genuine. And she writes, and she said, you've been gone for a couple of weeks and I've missed you, which is a lovely thing for her to say. So thanks very much. And then she says, I can't wait for your return. And then she then says, this led me to my question, which she's been dying to ask us and found that this was a really good segue into it. And her question is this: what is our favorite return in a movie?
Oh, I have an obvious one.
Go on. It's obvious as mine.
I think it could be the same.
Go on, you go first.
It's when Aragorn comes back in Two Towers and throws the doors open.
Yeah,
that's a cool moment.
That would be mine. Okay. Mine would be Return of the King, which is the ultimate return.
Yeah.
And then I got bogged down in Lord of the Rings, and I thought, well, Gandalf's got a pretty cool return as well. When he comes back and says, I'm Gandalf the White. And then I thought, well, no, there's another good return, which is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where everybody's looking over the cliff because they think Indy's fallen to his death.
Yeah.
and then I had another one, which was, this one would be sort of three, well, two actually. And I would go Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield in Spider-Man's.
That's a good one, yeah.
So did you have any other off the top of your head favourite returns in movies?
Infinity War, when Captain America comes back. That one's cool. Because it's sort of unexpected but dramatic at the same time.
That's a good one. I'm going to pin you down. You've got to choose one.
Actually, even Infinity War has a lot of good ones, because even the Thor one's quite good.
Yeah, Thor's got a good one.
I'm going to pick Captain America.
Okay.
We'll go different.
And I'm going to go with... my favourite return in a movie, it's got to be Aragorn in the Two Towers, coming through the doors, looking awesome.
Oh, okay.
So it's a cheap one, but it's an obvious one, so I'm going to go with that. So thanks, Amelie, for your question, and I'm sorry about that thing I said about your name. It's probably a very common name in
France. But thanks very much for your question. So our podcast isn't yet available on video streaming services because Sam and I aren't really ready to reveal our true identity on the internet.
No, not since what happened the last time.
Yeah, let's not do that again. But but what you can't see is that we are both sporting magnificent Benefit of Hindsight t-shirts, which also feature many Easter eggs from our shows, and you'd need to see it to get that. So what we've proposed is that we give one away for free by having a quiz. So if you know the answer to this question, first person to email in with the correct answer will get a free t-shirt, okay, of the Benefit of Hindsight. And so the question is this, what is the first movie that Sam and I watched together at the cinema? It's a difficult question to ask. Clue is there are three of them. So what were the first movies that Sam and I watched together at the cinema? And you would have to listen to the podcast to find out which ones they are. But if you know the answer to that question and you want a free Benefit of Hindsight t-shirt, please do drop us an email at thebenefitofhindsightpodcast@gmail.com and you'll win a free t-shirt. Sam, do you know the answer? Don't say it, but just in case, do you know the answer to that question?
Cloverfield.
Oh, you ruined it.
Yeah, the first film I ever saw at the cinema was in 2008. That's not right.
No. So
no.
Regular listeners will know the answer to that question, I'm sure, because we've talked about it, I think, on a number of occasions through different episodes.
Yeah.
Okay, but thank you so much to Amelie for her question and for the mean thing I said about your name. Of course, it's a French name, and I'm really sorry about that. And it's a beautiful name, too. So thanks very much for your question. And good news, we're back. We have returned after a brief hiatus because Sam was poorly and I was elsewhere. And we're back to talk about the Chicken Run movie, the 2000 Aardman classic, which we were both quite favourable about when we reviewed it the first time. I gave it a 9. Can you remember what you gave it?
I gave it a 9 as well, yeah.
So the question, which I always ask, which then ruins the remainder of the podcast, but do you think your score will change?
No.
Okay, well, stay tuned. I think mine will. Just to put that out there. Okay, I think mine will change.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you my first question about the Chicken Run movie. By the way, my first question about the Chicken Run movie is, did you know this is still the highest grossing stop motion animation movie of all time?
I didn't know that, actually. That's quite interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it's still the highest one. I checked before we came online.
There's been a lot since.
There certainly has, and yet this one is the king of them all. We normally get to this bit later, but it made $272 million on a $40 million budget. So it was a hit.
Wow.
Can you guess what the second highest grossing stop motion...
Is it another Aardman one, or is it going to be something else?
It's Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Oh, okay. Okay, fair enough, yeah. So that would have been my guess if you'd said...
That makes sense. This leads to my obvious question then. So are you ready to my obvious question?
Okay.
Objectively, this is the most successful financially. Is it a better movie than Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit?
No. I don't think so. I think I'd rank Curse of the Were-Rabbit higher. I wonder if it has anything to do with the fact that this is a fresh... brand new story,
yeah.
Whereas Wallace and Gromit is Wallace and Gromit. People know what to expect, whereas Chicken Run is like, oh, that's the people who make Wallace and Gromit.
Uh-huh.
I wonder what story they're going to tell, and it's sort of unique, and I don't know, maybe that was more interesting for people to go and see it.
Something else as well is that although the movie is terribly, terribly British, it did have a slight... American-ish about it because of the casting of Rocky. It was Mel Gibson, right? I wonder if that gave it a little something for the American audiences that Wallace and Gromit lacked.
Yeah, I think it is one of those where it's a bit of an American audience can kind of see themselves in Rocky because he's also entering this new world with all of these different things that he might not understand. So I can see it working in that respect. Yeah,
I'm amazed that you said that. Actually, because
thank you.
Because I was gonna make exactly the same point. So in Wallace and Gromit, in Wallace and Gromit, there's no objective eye. You are immersed in the world as the So there's nobody in there that you can sort of, I can't explain it, but it was exactly what you said. There's this, whereas Rocky adds a kind of a second eye, if you like. So you're watching the movie, but you're watching some of it through the eyes of Rocky. Whereas in Wallace and Gromit, you're just watching the movie. You're not watching it through anybody else's eyes. I've explained that really badly. Yeah. But I got a real sense of that when I was watching the movie.
Yeah, I know what you mean, though. It's quite interesting. And it does work from both perspectives, because even a British audience seeing how an American would react to these sort of things is the same sort of sense, yeah.
And all of the kind of... I hate using the word tropes, because it's like one of those sixth form words. But like all those little sort of movie Easter eggs, you've got the Great Escape in there and things like that. That, I think, kind of helps audiences understand what's going on too.
Yeah, yeah. And
lots of little Easter eggs. What was your favourite little Chicken Run Easter egg?
The ones that they laid.
Good answer. Like it.
No. Excellent. I don't know, because there's quite a lot. I think none of them spring to mind.
No. You can ignore that question
I don't know if it's an Easter egg per se, but it is a bit that I saw in the trivia, which is sort of kind of cool as well, is that because it's miniature, they can, and in the setting of chicken coops and things like that, they were able to use real things. So like some of the light bulbs were real in the chicken huts, whatever they call it, chicken coop.
That's the one.
I don't know.
Got there in the end.
Some of the lighting was real as well with the disco ball. So they're not directly Easter eggs, but I do like those little touches.
Yeah, that's a good one. My favorite one is the Chicken Run. That's not true. I'll rephrase that. I wasn't favorite. You were looking for what's it called? Is it a chicken coop? A chicken? It's called a Chicken Run. Hence the title of the movie.
Sorry, yeah. I love your reaction to my not knowing any Easter eggs. It's like, yeah, that's a good one. We just put anything in.
We're a bit out of practice with this, aren't we?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk briefly about the cast, because we have mentioned Mel Gibson. He's probably the only instantly recognisable name. There are other names that people outside of the UK might know. You've got Imelda Staunton as Bunty. She's probably known because she featured in the Harry Potter movies. Timothy Spall, also in Harry Potter. Miranda Richardson had a decent run of movies at some point. But then there are other people that we would be familiar with, Jane Horrocks and Phil Daniels, and Julia Sawala. We might know who they are. We can kind of recognize their voices. It was one of those casts where the voices, I thought, were perfectly cast, and they didn't feel the need to cast giant celebrities, with the exception of Mel Gibson. True. Any view on that?
Yeah, well, I don't know. My view on that is very much based on the Chicken Run sequel.
Mm-hmm.
In that, obviously, they had to get new... Well, they didn't have to get new voice actors. I know a lot of them... I think there was a bit of a kickoff on the internet because they didn't use some of the original ones because apparently they sounded too old.
Yeah.
But I think that's a bit harsh, to be honest. But yeah, I think it is a great cast, and always has been in a way. But yeah, don't really have much more to say. Really.
No, it is true that the cast just works really, really well, and they work within the context of the movie, and you don't have to know who they are for them to work. And that's kind of my point. I mean, you could have used any American actor to play Rocky, and Mel Gibson got the role because at the point that this movie is being made, he's still quite big in Hollywood. Jane Horrocks, I guess people might know Jane Horrocks. She was in a movie called Little Voice, which was sort of a minor hit for her. And she was also in Absolutely Fabulous, that went a bit more global. But no, it's a really good cast within the context of the cast itself, without being super duper famous.
One thing that I did notice this time around, which I don't think I've really paid much attention to prior, but it became my favourite part of the film, is the music. I think it's fantastic. It's I can't think of the right words. I want to say traditional, but it's not. I suppose it is in a way, because it references the films that it's based on. So
yeah,
The Great Escape, things like that. You can feel that sort of sense within it. But it's just got some great leitmotifs and things like that, and tunes to it. And I think it's brilliant for each character and just the story overall. Like, I really enjoyed it, and it's all I recall.
The one of the composers, there are two composers. One of the composers, Harry Gregson Williams, who we mentioned on the previous episode, because he also did the music for The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. But he's done music for X-Men movies, the Shrek franchise. He did the music for Flushed Away. More recently, he did the music for Gladiator 2. Which has been a big hit. So yeah, so I'm glad you pointed out the music, because I thought that as well. It's actually a really good soundtrack. It's like just perfectly done.
I think it's a great one to revisit as well, because it's just got so many bits of music to it that just work and they're interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Also, the little disco dance scene might be one of the best scenes in cinematic history.
I think that's...
I get excited every time I watch this movie because I want to see that scene.
I think that's probably true. My favourite bit in the whole movie is, I've referenced this, when Ginger gets placed in the cooler. It's actually a coal scuttle, I think. And she's doing the thing with the Brussels sprout, which is exactly what's happened in The Great Escape. Which I thought was quite funny. Mm-hmm. And then I also like the fact that that hut that they're in is 17, which is obviously a reference to Stalag 17 and things like that. And all those little kind of references to Prisoner of War, other great escape movies that sort of run through the whole thing. Just really nicely done. It's perfect Aardman.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the best way to describe it, I think.
Even down to the machine that makes pies, chickens go in, pies come out, and of course that's not true, but it does that brilliant Aardman thing of creating an absolutely useless piece of machinery that is that's perfectly useful.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that Wallace could probably build and still be convincing as well.
Absolutely, it's overcomplicating the simple. Interesting. There's a review of this movie by Roger Ebert, who we've referenced before, and he gave this film a really, really good review, and he said there are a lot of movies that are made, and I'm paraphrasing him here. There's a lot of movies, he said, that are made that are kind of about vegetarianism and veganism, and they're all a bit preachy, and they try and teach us something about animals, and he referenced Babe. Which sort of put people off eating bacon sandwiches for years, apparently. And he said this movie is different because we're not necessarily worried about the chickens being eaten in that sense. That's not our concern. Our concern is, can they escape and find a new life? And he said it was a completely different approach. He said Babe uses movies as he uses animals as surrogates for our hopes and fears and our concerns about farming and over-farming. All we care about at the chickens is that they run through one failed escape attempt after another until eventually the charm of the movie wins us over, which I thought was quite a nice philosophical thing, possibly overthinking it, but otherwise, a really, really nice way of looking at it. And interestingly enough, there's an awful lot of people that have come out and said things about this movie. So a famous feminist writer said that it's a really good movie because it shows femininity as strength as opposed to masculinity. So all the women are waiting for this man to come and rescue them. And in reality, he's next to useless. The women are capable of rescuing themselves.
That does sort of sound like real life.
Yes, it does, yeah. So it's just one of those things, yeah, where it just sort of is absolutely true. Did it get any Oscars, do you think? Did it win any awards?
I'd hope so. Maybe it might have been nominated for one. I don't know if it would have won it.
As far as I can make out, it didn't get nominated for any Academy Awards, which is staggering, really. I find that quite difficult to believe, and I might need to check that. But it certainly was nominated for BAFTAs. It was nominated for the best British film and didn't win. It did win things, but yeah, I'm staggered that it didn't get nominated for any Academy Awards, unless I'm absolutely mistaken. But I don't see that in the list of things here.
Yeah, do you know what it is? Actually, no, that wouldn't date it, right? So, I don't know. I feel like there is something.
Yeah. You think it would have done, right? But absolutely. Not according to the internet. It didn't, yeah.
I thought I noticed a mistake in this film.
Which was?
Well, for some reason, I thought there was a continuity error. I thought Mr. Tweedy was wearing the wrong trousers. Right. But no, I was wrong. It was my bad. It was the wrong shot.
Interesting. No, I didn't see that. I was consistently looking throughout this movie for references to other Aardman movies. And I was going to ask if you found any, because strangely enough, I sort of didn't really. Did you?
No, neither did I. And I think what it is we're so used to seeing them nowadays that we mm-hmm. look for them in the older ones. And I think it's only been since Chicken Run that things have been referenced elsewhere. So I think Feathers appears in other Aardman media from now on, or yeah. references to Chicken Run from now on, whereas it wasn't so much back then, which is odd.
it's true. The other thing to say about this movie, which again is sort of reference to what you've just said, is that this is really early in Aardman history.
Yeah.
So there's been three successful Wallace and Gromit shorts, and then this is their first foray into a major feature film. And so there's not that much more they can reference, is there? It's kind of referencing other movies rather than referencing back on itself.
That's true, actually. Yeah, the references are to other movies rather than other Aardman animation things. Yeah.
Whereas now, with now Aardman is a kind of a thing, they can reference themselves. So when you go into The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, there's lots of back references to other Aardman movies, and certainly that's true in Flushed Away.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know if there's any Chicken Run references in Flushed Away, though.
Well, we'd have to check. Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
Do you know one thing that really struck me in this movie was we've talked about Aardman and lightness and, you know, it's sort of humanizing the animals and everything else. It's still quite disturbing when they take the chicken out and, well, frankly, they kill it. I didn't realize just how dark that bit was in the movie.
I think I was too naive growing up watching that scene, but as an adult, I was like, this seems a bit much. It's a lot darker than I remember. Yeah, it's interesting, though, because for a few of them, it was a bit of a close shave. They could have been picked.
Yeah.
But no, it was that one instead, yeah.
And it is properly dark, that little bit right there. I think that's really clever, that little bit of darkness, which I don't think is really... You can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I don't think there's that level of darkness in... Curse of the Were-Rabbit. It's certainly not there in Flushed Away. That was a real moment of sort of what emphasizing that even though we're kind of watching this jolly cartoon about chickens, there's a real sense that it means something to them's life and death.
Absolutely.
Deep. Yeah, deep about Chicken Run. Do you have any Sam's famous out-of-pocket takes and or trivia on Chicken Run?
Yeah, so my out-of-pocket take for this one is it's a message. And we should be more careful of how we look after and treat chickens. It was a warning.
Who was it a warning from? From chickens.
The chickens.
From the chickens. Yeah. Okay. So it's okay.
They'll escape if they have to.
They will. Absolutely, they will. They won't stand for it.
Moving on swiftly. Mm-hmm. Babs's knitting is real. It was apparently done with toothpicks as needles. So. They actually made it, and I thought that was quite interesting. But I did think it was plasticine, but looking back, it probably wasn't.
Wow.
But it's just a nice little touch there.
I've just found a little bit of thing, which is that there was a major push to get this film nominated for an Academy Award, and it didn't get it. So it didn't get anywhere in the Academy Awards. But its failure to get a nomination... and the popularity of the movie, both with the general audience and critics, led to the Academy introducing the best animated movie at the next.
Okay.
So it couldn't have won it.
But it's interesting that it paved the way for
the way.
Future, though.
Okay, so then that leads to the quiz question for Sam this week, which is, this couldn't win Best Animated Feature because it didn't exist. The following year, there there was a Best Animated Feature category. Which film do you think won it?
Monsters, Inc.
No, Shrek.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah. Did you?
I'm sure you've said that before.
I think we probably have had that question before. Did you know that Nick Park kept pet chickens?
Oh, no.
Okay, and can you name two of his pet chickens as a childhood?
Ginger,
for 1 point. Can you name the second of his pet chickens, or amongst his pet chickens?
I don't want to go too obvious with this. Bunty.
Rocky.
Do you know, I didn't want to go with the obvious answer, and that was it.
Yeah, there you go.
Never mind.
Yeah, well, there you go.
That's cool, though.
And just to steal your trivia thunder, Mel Gibson said no when he was offered the movie.
Oh, wow.
Because he didn't think it was serious enough, and he'd never done a voice on an animated movie before. And he was convinced to do it by his young children. Because they loved Wallace and Gromit. They were Wallace and Gromit fans. And they told him he was mad and that he should go and do it.
Nice. That always seems to happen.
Here's my next quiz question for you. There's another famous character / actor that we've already referenced in this podcast that originally said no to a part and was convinced to do it by their child, who was a fan of the source material. Do you know who that is?
Viggo Mortensen.
Yes. Yeah, there you go.
Of course I knew that.
Of course you knew that one. Everybody out there's tutting. So if you didn't know that, what's the point of it all? Any more pieces of trivia for Chicken Run?
I do. I've got a few, actually.
Let's do that.
Apparently the original idea that the filmmakers had was that they would have sparrows ridicule the chickens trying to fly, but they changed it to rats instead, rather, rather than spend money on characters that would be on screen for a brief time. So it's quite interesting that they used Nick and Fletcher instead.
They were
can't speak today.
They were good, Nick and Fletcher. I'd forgotten how funny they were.
Yeah, it's a good inclusion, I think, of those characters for sure.
Really good double act. Repeated, I think, in Flushed Away. Not the same thing, but conceptually, those sort of wide boy cockney kind of characters do repeat in Flushed Away.
Yeah, I think you need that kind of character in these things, definitely.
Yeah. There was a really interesting thing that I read about this. The filmmakers were nervous about showing two chickens kissing because they weren't sure how it would play out on screen. And so, and
interspecies relations.
And so when you see the kiss, the actual thing is staged, so you don't actually see their beaks touch.
Yeah. Do you know what it is? I noticed that this time around. Funny enough.
Yeah, I thought that was really one of those kind of, because that is weird, right? Chickens presumably don't kiss.
Yeah. No. Yeah. But they also probably don't build flying machines. So.
What?
At what point do you suspend your disbelief?
You mean they don't build flying machines?
Not the ones that I've seen. Not yet, anyway.
Wow.
This film is a message. It's a warning.
It's a warning.
The voice of the clucking chicken below the disguised teapot is apparently Nick Park, the director.
Didn't need to swear, though, did you?
No.
I'm so sorry.
That was a bit of a tongue twister.
The clucking chicken. Oh, that could have gone wrong, couldn't it?
It's a family show.
It's a family show. That clucking chicken under the teapot.
Whoa.
Well, I did say, I didn't.
Can't say that. There's flipping kids listening.
Yeah, little cluckers. Oh, it's all going downhill. Favorite joke in the whole thing was, I've just remembered, favorite joke in the whole thing is when they're flying the machine and the Scottish chicken Mac turns into Scotty from Star Trek.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I cannot work miracles. We're giving her all she's got, and then it's also a reference to Klingons and things like that. And at some point, yeah. Fowler shouts, "Great Scott!" Even calls the character Scott. So there's another reference to another movie in there as well. Very funny.
Not even kiss their bums goodbye.
That's a good joke as well. Do you remember we used that joke often? That was a thing. You know, when we came out of the movie thing, that was the thing that we remembered.
Yeah, definitely.
I remember you would have been quite young, and that was your favourite thing.
Absolutely.
Kiss their bums goodbye, and you would giggle at saying those words.
Yeah.
How dare you?
This is one of those classic Aardman things, but apparently halfway through productions, the animators had gone through 3,370 pounds of plasticine, which is fun, because apparently they're running out as well. I don't know if you know this.
No, I don't know that.
No, currently, at this point, I think what it is they're running out because the company that they use to source their plasticine is shut down.
Wow.
So they don't have that sort of same plasticine anymore. It's not as if plasticine's short, though. Like, it's got to be around somewhere.
So the plasticine thing, that's a nice segue into a question that I'm going to ask you, which has got nothing to do with Chicken Run.
Oh.
So at this point, this is pre the new Wallace and Gromit movie. And we've both seen the trailer for the new Wallace and Gromit movie. How excited are you for that movie?
As a side note, I've just put my hand in my pocket and found a fingernail, and it really hurt.
You found
that's staining.
You found a fingernail.
Yeah, there's a random fingernail in my pocket. And it stabbed me in the finger.
But hang on, I need to understand what a fingernail is in this context.
It's a nail from my finger.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what I thought. But then, had it fallen off?
Yeah.
Had it fallen off?
I don't know where it's come from. A finger, presumably, but I don't know how it got in my pocket.
If it's not your fingernail...
It's definitely mine.
Okay, good.
It's got my DNA on it.
Okay. Do we need to call you an ambulance or something? Do we need,
no, I'm okay.
Do we need to pour...
I think I'm really excited for the new Wallace and Gromit.
Do we need to pause the recording? Do we need to release a charity single?
Yes.
Okay. We'll,
that's all I want.
We'll get that organised. So, yeah, how excited are you for the new Wallace and Gromit movie?
I'm quite excited. I'm counting down the days, which is also Christmas Day. I've decided, though, and this is a very important statement, I would be happy not getting any presents on Christmas so long as I can eat Wensley Day-long crackers whilst watching the new Wallace and Gromit. That's all I need this year.
I don't disagree. I had an idea about a podcast episode. Because you know our podcast is about films that we've watched before. I think the Wallace and Gromit new release is such a big deal that what we should do is in our next episode, right? Bear with me on this, listener and Sam, because I haven't shared this with anybody yet. In our next...
There's a bear with you.
Yeah, it's just over there, yeah. Yeah. He came in, that bear, right? And he stopped in the middle of the room, and he was there for about 2 minutes. And I said, I said, "What? All right, Mr. Bear, why the big pause?"
We've gone off the rails.
You're welcome. So this is my thing. So in our next episode, instead of choosing another film to watch, let's briefly change our podcast to the benefit of foresight. We should give a score for what we think the new Wallace and Gromit movie will get. Then go away and watch the Wallace and Gromit movie, and score it based on having actually seen it.
Okay.
Do you want to do that?
Let's do that.
So for clarity, at the end of this episode, we'll choose a movie. We'll go away, we'll watch that movie, we'll come back and talk about it next week. And then next week, we won't choose a movie. We'll spend a few minutes talking about the new Wallace and Gromit movie, and then given the score that we think we're going to give it based on what we know about it, then go away and watch it. So as a special Christmas bonus episode between Christmas and New Year, people will get to find out hot off the press what you, the uber Wallace and Gromit fan, think about the new Wallace and Gromit movie.
Okay.
Genius.
It's also a great pilot episode for when we eventually, millions of years down the line, do the benefit of foresight.
Yeah, more on that to follow. More on that to follow, because we've still got hundreds of these movies to get through.
Yeah.
So I have essentially run out of things to say about Chicken Run. Anything you want to add to what we've said?
No, I think it's a great story. I think it's a sort of a grand day out kind of thing, and I really enjoyed it. So I think we're ready to move on to conclusions now. Yeah.
Okay. So you chose the movie, right?
No, you chose it for my birthday.
That's right. It's been such a long time ago. So I chose the movie, which means that I have to go first on giving it my benefit of hindsight score, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so, so I gave it 9 out of 10. And I think that is a good score for a good movie. I can't go up to a 10 out of 10 because I don't think it's as good as Curse of the Were-Rabbit, which is a 10 all day long. Okay. And I think it's probably my third favorite Aardman movie that we've watched on this show so far.
Wow. Okay.
So I think I would go number one, Curse of the Rabbit, number two, Flushed Away, and Chicken Running at number three. So I'm going to go down to an 8. Wasn't quite as good as I remembered it being. And the fact that we don't have that much to say about it, in my view, as always, tells its own story. So I'm going to go from a 9 to an 8.
Okay, yeah, fair enough, yeah.
And you?
So, obviously, I was a 9 as well, yeah. I do really like the story, and I do like the characters in it, and it's very... It feels... You get that sense of a matter of love and death kind of thing going on, and I think the story just sort of marries that quite well. I love the music. I think it's one of the best Aardman soundtracks there is. I think... It's just because we're on the topic and doing the same thing. I think my order would be Curse of the Were-Rabbit, Chicken Run, and then Flushed Away. Mm-hmm. But I do think I'm gonna follow in your footsteps and say 8 out of 10. Because I think there was just that sort of childish charm that was sort of lost on me this time around. And as an adult, I noticed things a bit differently. I still enjoyed it, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But I think moving to an 8 now, yeah.
I think 8's a very creditable score for what is a very creditable movie. I just at the time, because you're starved of Aardman things in those days, you lap it all up and it's awesome. But I just don't think it's quite as good. So yeah, 2 8s from us, which takes it down from an aggregate score of 18 to 16. But that's still a pretty high score for us.
Yeah.
And so we need to move on. And you, I believe, are in charge of choosing our next movie. Most exciting part of the show. I love this bit.
Oh, thank you. Well, I didn't know what to choose, as always, so I looked through our huge list just to see what I could find, and I settled on something that I don't have much of a memory of, but it's a film that I've always wanted to revisit, and we definitely saw it in the cinema, and I think I remember enjoying it at the time, but it was one of those where it's not a big franchise, so I don't fall into the fad of it all, but I am looking forward to seeing it again.
Okay.
It's the 2009... Where the Wild Things Are.
Okay, yeah.
I don't really remember the film that much. I do remember enjoying it, I think. I feel like there's something about it that I didn't quite like. But I think I'm going to be generous and not just fall in the middle, but I'm going to go for a 6 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested to see what I think about it afterwards. What do you think?
I do have a memory of this because Where the Wild Things Are, it's kind of a seminal book from my childhood as a child of the 70s, as opposed to you as a child of the 90s and the noughties. So it's a seminal book.
I thought that's what it was.
And it's by Morris Sendak, who also did a very famous book called In the Night Kitchen. And they were huge. It was one of those books that was always around. And so I was properly excited by it. And it was directed by, if I remember correctly, Spike Jonze. Is that what his name is?
I think it's Jones, but yeah.
Spike Jones. So it came in with this kind of really well-respected director who'd made serious dramatic movies, and there was a high expectation for it. And so I wanted to watch it. And I remember it being a thing of beauty that was quite dull. That's my memory of the movie.
I think I get that impression as well because of... I don't know if it suits or CGI, but... I think it should have been bigger than it was.
But
from memory,
I wonder if, as the fact that I'm now slightly more mature, I guess I don't know if that's fair or true. I might appreciate it more. So my score from memory is 4.
Okay.
And so that gives it an overall score of 10 out of a possible 20. That's really excited to go and watch Where the Wild Things Are. Yeah. Because I think
I've really been meaning to get around to it.
I think this film might land differently now. I don't know why I think that.
Yeah, me too.
But I there's a good chance that one of two things will happen. One, we'll go away and have a transcendent movie experience, and say it's the most amazing thing we've ever seen and give it tens all day, or we'll come away and say, no, there's a reason why we don't remember it. Oh my God, it was long and slow and boring and things. So yeah, let's see. So
I'm interested.
I'm very interested. So as well as that, then, just to confirm to the listener who's still left listening to this, next week we'll review, we'll watch that again, we'll talk about it, and then we'll do the new Wallace and Gromit movie. Understood?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Understood.
Just wanted to be clear on that. So I just wanted to say one thing, which was apologize for going silent on people. We'll try not to do it again, but Sam was poorly and I was busy, so our 2-week hiatus was not deliberate. We are back and we're ready and raring to go. And don't forget, you can still win a Benefit Findsight podcast t-shirt, which I should tell you is the most awesome t-shirt in the history of t-shirts. Agreed?
It is. Yeah. Do you want to remind everyone of the question, just in case? The
question is, if you're still listening, you got this far, which movies were the first movies that Sam and I watched together at the cinema? And if you answer that question correctly and you're the first person to reply, you'll get a free t-shirt. Benefit Findsight podcast at gmail.com. Don't forget to include your...
It's a very comfortable t-shirt.
Don't forget to include your size. You know, we do the thing where we look at what day it is today.
Oh, yeah.
It's World Mountain Day.
Funny enough, I saw that at work, and it has actually come up at on my laptop as well.
World Mountain Day, which is good because I feel on top of the world.
Nice.
That's not true. That's not true.
Mount Doom.
It's also Indiana Day in, well, Indiana.
Well, good for you, Dr. Jones.
No, you're thinking of the dog.
Is it the what?
The dog.
Right. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Well, if you're still with us, thanks for listening to our podcast. And thank you for being with us all this way. We'll be back next week with... our ruminations on the Spike Jonze classic Where the Wild Things Are, based on the classic book by Morris Sendak, and which is, I was just trying to find another way to get classic into that sentence. I couldn't do it.
A classic.
Which is basically a classic. All right. So thanks very much for listening, and bye-bye. Bye from me.
And bye from me. Bye.
Hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?